Just the regular volume?
Yeah, just regular volume, and, you know, try to keep it consistent, but I'll move in and out if you get louder or softer. Mm-hmm. So why don't we start with, you start with introducing yourself, and say, I am, so it's a complete sentence, and then tell me how far back you can trace your family history.
Okay. I am Kathy Rowland. I have Hawaiian descent going back as far as, that I can recall, early to mid-1800s. 1835, I believe, my great-great-grandfather came to this coast for the first time.
Wow. And do you want to explain what interested you about your ancestry, how you got started with your family history?
Well, it all stemmed from my Uncle Paul. Uncle Paul was, he was wheelchair-bound very early, about a teenager. He ended up in a wheelchair. And so he stayed home with his mother while the rest of the family was going to school and work. And that. And she entertained him just by telling him stories of the past, her father, and what she could remember, because she was born here in Canada, so she never saw her homeland. But she told him the stories of the old people in the Hudson's Bay days, the fur trading days, as best she could remember. And it was Uncle Paul who really started to dig into the background and the history. And once he got it rolling, of course, then it was sort of like, then he decided, we have to remember this. It's an oral history. You know, that's just the way it's always been. They pass the stories down onto the next generation. So he sort of cornered me. I must have taken an interest in it. I don't really recall. But he was the one who was always telling you stories. And he said, you have to remember this. You have to remember this. And he'd tell you over and over and over the stories. With me, it was more dates and places and names and the family tree. He wanted me to keep it straight so that, you know, if someone asked, someone knew, because our family tree is more like a hedge. It starts with William Naokana and his wife, whom we never knew. They didn't know her name. She was a First Nations lady. And then he had six children. And then from there, like one of those daughters was my grandmother, and she had 15 children. So they had huge families. So our family tree is like a hedge. And it's difficult. There's a lot of, like, married twice or three times, different husbands and wives. So, like, there's half-brothers, half-sisters. Like, you know, keep it straight. So for me, it was my Uncle Paul who really, really drove it home. You know, remember this. You have to remember. My brother John, now he's got the sort of the stories. You know, like, they're not legends. They're just stories of parties and happenings and stuff like that. And once he gets going, he just kills me because I don't remember those sort of things as well as I do the dates.
So could you pretend you're talking to an American audience who says Native American, and just explain what First Nations means and its relationship to the phrase Native American.
Okay. The First Nations people here in Canada, I'm trying to be politically correct, because as children we were raised like we were part Indian and we were part Hawaiian, and my mother was European by descent. But now today, politically incorrect to say Indian. So like I'm always struggling with, is it First Nations? Is it Aboriginal? Is it, what would you say? Are the other words for it? I'm stumbling.
That's okay. We say Native American. So.
Native American? Okay. Well, yeah. Well, then that would work for you. For us, it would be Native Canadian. You know, so it's... You got to be correct these days. But when I grew up, I was a Hawaiian and I was an Indian. So it doesn't bother me either way.
So the man you were talking about, I'm assuming he was the first Hawaiian to come. How did he, do you know anything about how he came over from Hawaii and what he was employed to do?
William Naokana was the first member of our family. Well, now that's speculation too. As far as I know, he was the first member of our family to come to this coast, although there was a man before that here on the coast they called him John Cox, but his given name was William Naokane, A on the end rather than A, Naokana, Naokane. Two different surnames, they sound very similar, but there's speculation that he was the father of my great-grandfather. Now, I don't know for sure. We've always tried to run that down, but never found the right documentation. So if I go back as to my great-grandfather, William Noah O'Connor, he came here in 1835, I believe, on the bark Columbia. Yes, the Columbia. It was a Hudson's Bay ship. They came with the Hudson's Bay Company. The fur trade is what really brought the Hawaiians here to this coast. There was some exploration and stuff beforehand, but the Hawaiians have been on this coast since, early 1800s. But the fur trade has been around since about 1811. So it really was the fur trade that brought them here. And the Hudson's Bay Company established themselves here in 1821, and they were really instrumental in bringing lots of Hawaiians to work in their forts and being guides, interpreters. William Naukana came in 1835 and became an interpreter with the language. They changed they combined the Indian language, the French, a bit of Scottish, Hawaiian. They jumbled it all together, and it became what they called Chinook. And so it was sort of a bits and pieces of all those different languages, because all of these people worked at the forts. So my great-grandfather became an interpreter and a guide. He learned the rivers and systems and took people up and down the river for settlement purposes. And he stayed in Fort Vancouver, which is at the mouth of the Columbia River. Okay. He stayed there for 4 or 5 years, and then about 1840 they moved. Well, they put in, that was the Oregon Treaty, they put in the border at the 49th parallel. And so the Hudson's Bay Company wanted a fort on this side of the border also, and so that's when they built Fort Victoria. So Naukana moved to Fort Victoria and helped build that. I think he worked on the border also, the surveying through there. Came to Victoria, worked on Fort Victoria, and he'd put in quite a few years by that time with the Hudson's Bay Company. And at that time, I guess, instead of going back to the Hawaiian Islands, they were offered land here. They wanted this area settled. They, you know, they encouraged it. And he started a family here, so they offered him land on one of the little islands just out of Fulford Harbor, just north of the San Juans for you. San Juans become the Gulf Islands on this side of the border, but it's the same island chain. They just wiggled the border through them. So he started settling on that little island between him and another one of his patriots, Johnny Palau. They were given a lot each on this small little island. A few years later, they both bought the other two lots, so the two of them ended up owning the island and farmed it, cleared it, raised their families there, until they just got too old to be out there on their own. And then they moved to Salt Spring Island, which is where my father was born, I was born, and a whole pile of the family's all still there.
Great, wonderful. How do you know about these? What kind of records did you find? How did you go about researching, or your uncle?
Oh, the ongoing search for all of this information. If I had 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to do this, I would be a happy person. I can go down to the archives here. They have a lot of newspaper clippings and things like from that way back that you can look and find names, but it's a lot of searching. You're better off to know a date, a specific date, than you can go and look up that newspaper. When you're just searching for a name, there's no index, so it takes a long, long time. The Hudson's Bay Company has an archive here in Victoria, which I didn't know about it until a short time ago. I read it in the paper. Maybe there's some information there. There's a huge Hudson's Bay Company archive in Winnipeg. I think that's their main spot. I've never been there, but I know there's lots of information. I would love to know. They must have kept logs on the ships, who came and went, at what dates and stuff. But I haven't had a chance to look at that yet. Most of my information came from my Uncle Paul. And that came from his mother. It was all that handed down information. And I worry about it probably too much sometimes, because I wonder if he got the date right. You know, you talked to him one time and it was like 1835, and then the next time it's like 1836, and you think, oh, well, was it 35 or 36? And then he's very sure. I said 36. You go, okay. Names slightly different, like Naokane and Naokana. You think, oh, dear. They changed a lot of the Hawaiian names here. I don't know if they found them difficult to pronounce. Probably definitely difficult to spell, because some of those names are a mile long. So I don't know if William Naokana, I don't know if his given name was William. That might have been given to him. There's a lot of Williams, a lot of Johns, a lot of Marys. They just sort of picked a name and gave it to you. My cousins here, their surname was Kahana. K-A-H-A-N-A. Like, easy. Kahana. How can you go wrong? But they changed it to Tahoni. I think it's an Irish spelling. And it's T-A-H-O-U-N-E-Y. Now, I think Kahana's easier, but somehow or other it became Tahoni, and it's still Tahoni today. So it's really difficult to research when the names were changed like that and they were just arbitrarily given a name. We'll call you John. We'll call you Mary. You know, so information is hard to find, but you just keep scratching away at it.
Yeah, great. Just keep your hands like that. Just a few of them I can hear. So if, you know, a lot of these stories are coming down, how did he, or any of your other ancestors you can think of, getting married, raising a family, actual life while they were working for the company? Do you have any anecdotes about that you could say? Especially the getting married. Maybe, like, when did you become half Indian? Where did that come in?
Okay. Now, William Naokana married to a native woman here on the coast. Most of the Hudson's Bay employees did marry native people. Of course, there was so many native people here. Most of the people coming to the forts were men. The Hudson's Bay Company, they wanted them to settle. So they encouraged them to marry the native people. It was just good for relations. It was good to settle the area. So most of the Hawaiian men did marry into the native community. My great-grandfather married a native woman whom we never knew her name. She died after my grandmother was born. My grandmother was the last of six children for her. And whether my grandmother never knew her or it just wasn't spoken of, I don't know, but she never mentioned that she knew her name. So it's sort of a dead end for us. All we know is that she was a native woman. So that leaves my grandmother being half native and half Hawaiian. And she married a man. He was half native, and his mother was native, and his father was Welsh. So then they got married and had their families. It was all this interaction with the native community, you know, and that's solely probably because they were the largest group of people here. You know, it just makes sense. Anybody else was brought in, as I said, by the fur trade. So they were few and far between.
Great. Do you know about, do you know anything about how they, about how they felt about it? Did they enjoy working for Hudson's Bay Company? Were they a good company? Did they do awful things? Or
the Hawaiians, by all accounts, were very well treated by the British who were running the Hudson's Bay Company at the time. The Hawaiian people, they seemed to really like the Hawaiian people. They were happy, easygoing, easy to get along with. So they were treated so well that it was not a problem for them to be here and want to stay. Their homeland in Hawaii was in a bit of upheaval, you know. The King Kamehameha had united their islands in the early 1800s. So that was a big change for those that were leaving to come here. Did they want to go back to that? What was happening back home? Because they were here for years at a time. The Hudson's Bay paid them. They worked. They were paid. They were allowed to vote long before a lot of the other Aboriginal people here. There was no need for them to go back. Once they got settled here and realized, like, here, with the seasons, like, you know, just being able to grow fruit and vegetables. Like, my grandfather was just taken with cherry trees. He planted cherry trees everywhere he went. I guess you just don't grow cherry trees in Hawaii, right? They grow pineapples, and, you know. So I think the Hawaiians, once they settled here, really, really enjoyed being here. I think they loved the seasons. They loved the seafood, the tides. You don't have a tide in Hawaii. You don't go digging clams in Hawaii, right? Here they do. So I think the Hawaiians really took to this area, and it was very easy for them to stay and want to be here.
Great. Have you been to Hawaii? Do you feel any connection to Hawaii?
Let me see, that was 1970. My uncle Paul got...
Say that again, sorry, I got the P.
In 1970, my uncle Paul made his first trip back to Hawaii. First time ever. And it was sort of a fluke happening. A reporter from the Honolulu Star Advertiser, her name was Mary Cook, was up here with, I believe it was a school group of children. They were entertainers, I believe. They came and probably danced the hula, sang some of their Hawaiian songs. And so they were here in BC just to entertain and show people what their language and customs were about. So she came along with that group to report the story when they got home. They were offered a guide, his name was Pat Crofton, to get them around BC, you know, get them to ferries and on time and to their hotels. And on the trip between Vancouver, from Vancouver side to Victoria, he just mentioned in passing, he sort of threw his arm out over the Gulf Islands and said, there's a lot of Hawaiians who live over there. And so the reporter that she was, you know, ooh, really? So she, the following day, I believe she made a trip over to Salt Spring, had no idea what to look for, arrived at the little village at Fulford Harbor. It's the basic one-store village, right? It's got the gas pump out front, and you can get your stamps and your groceries, everything in one store. Walked in and said, I was told that there was Hawaiians living here on the island. And the old guy just said, oh, that would be the Rolands. They gave him the directions. She just drove down to the house. She saw my dad and my uncle and just went, wow, you know, you people look more Hawaiian than half of the Hawaiians I see at home. So she did an interview with them and took the story back home and ran it in the paper, and everybody was just enthralled with these lost Hawaiians, you know, in the north for so many years. And so the Honolulu Star Advertiser got it together and paid a trip for them, you know, bring these people home, basically. So it was really interesting. He lucked into that. He and one of his sisters and my oldest brother John went down in 1970. And were treated quite royally. They really enjoyed it. It was quite a trip for them. Over 350 people, like with the last name Naokana, showed up at the airport looking for their lost family. And they all had a flower lay, and I guess their custom, every single one had to go on. So they'd pile them on till they were out of sight, then they'd take them off, put them aside, pile on the next ones. Met all these people, and then started to wade through to see if any of the stories matched up, if any of the names matched up, to try and find the family that might be connected to us. And we did. We made a connection with Mary and Nathan and Billy and Brown. And we spent years up till the last few years, going down to visit them. I went with my mother and father in 72, I believe, for the first time, and met the family. And since then, I've been back many, many times. I went a lot in the 80s. I was down, boy, twice a year or so I would go down. I met some friends down there. They were entertainers, singers in Waikiki. And I'd go down and stay with them. And go down and sing with them down at it was the Hilton Hawaiian Village at Benihana's of Tokyo. Had a big water wheel out front. It was a little Japanese restaurant, but they all have their little lounge and happy hour, 4 to 7, happy hour, happy 3 hours. I mean. So every day between 4 and 7, my pals would go down there and they'd set up and they'd sing Hawaiian songs and they'd dance the odd hula. And if they had guests who would sing, whether they be from Australia or Canada or wherever, they'd get them up there and you'd sing your stuff. And it was a good, fun time. I did that for years.
So while you were growing up, where was your cultural heritage in your life?
We were born and raised on Salt Spring Island. That's where my great-grandfather ended up after his raising his family on Portland. He moved as an old man to Salt Spring with his youngest daughter, who was my grandmother. And all her children were born and raised on Salt Spring. We were all born and raised on Salt Spring. Being part Indian, we were not raised on reserve at all. We were raised just in the regular community, attended the local schools. So I lost a lot of the old customs and heritage and that sort of end of things. Like now, I go into the Native communities and I hear their stories and I sort of know them, but I don't. I missed all that. I missed the elders and their knowledge, you know, which is sad. But it's, you know, it's what it is. I can learn it now. We had my grandmother. She knew more about her Hawaiian roots because she never knew her mother.
So are there any other anecdotes about your Hawaiian ancestors that you could think of?
Oh, the Hawaiian ancestors. Well, I think when we returned to Hawaii, like, I always thought our upbringing was rather unremarkable, just sort of normal and, you know, nothing different. We had different words that popped out every now and then that people would sort of look at you and go, what are you talking about? Like, pig in Hawaiian is pua'a. And if you ever had pork and beans, they had that little white hunk of fat floating around. Well, to us, that was pua'a skin. And it just was normal to us. But you talk to other people and they go, what are you talking about? So we had certain words, Hawaiian words that popped out. We never spoke the language growing up. My grandmother never spoke it. I think it was, you know, it wouldn't be understood in the community. So why, you know? So she only spoke English, but the few words that did drift down were sort of slang, and you know, we got a lot of them wrong. We thought pokai was dog, and when we got to Hawaii, we found out that meant cat. So we had a lot of dogs named Cat in those days. But the sort of luau experience, we didn't call it a luau, and we didn't know that that's what we were doing until we went to Hawaii and found out, oh yeah. Every bit of food like on the table was salmon and beef and ham and pork and chicken. Everything went on the table. Every vegetable you had in the larder. And then that was just the food end of it. The party went on. It always went all weekend, night and day. They sang, they danced, they took shifts. You'd sleep, you'd get up, the party's still raging on, you know. I'm sure a lot of people do that. Like, it's not that it's a custom only to Hawaii, but I remember my uncles and my aunts, the songs they sang were like Beyond the Reef and Hawaii Calls. So they weren't like the popular songs of the day. And it was a strange connection to make after going back to Hawaii and realizing the parallels that happened. My uncles and aunts all sang. I remember their voices so clearly. And I guess it just seemed more so with them than anybody else. They were always ready to sing, play a guitar if they could. We didn't dance the hula. The hula was never brought to us. My grandmother being born here, she never knew it. When I went back to Hawaii, I learned a few hulas. I'm not very good at it, but I learned it.
Do you know any songs? Could you sing a song for me?
The songs, I never learned to speak the language. I can sort of read it phonetically. It's sort of like French, you know. You know some words in French just because you've heard them. So, like, I can sing it phonetically, but I don't... Well, I do understand more now, and that's just by repetition. A lot of the songs are about flowers. That Pua is flower. Pua Olena is one of the songs I've always liked just because the melody's so pretty. It's like, Pua Olena, Pua Moe Fale, Ikana Hele O Aide. Kaua, okay, I don't remember the words. See, if I have it and I'm reading it, I can sing it. But without the words, I'm sort of lost.
That was great. That's wonderful. Thank you. Any more stories like your uncle would tell about the old 1800s?
Oh, I wish my brother were here to tell some of the stories, because as I said, I was really inundated with the dates, the names, to protect the innocent. And my brother has these stories that are incredible. No, nothing I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay.
More so, stories of my dad and his brothers and their antics, you know, which is hardly the old time stuff. Dynamiting fish and blowing all the caulking out of the boat so it sank and stuff like that.
Dynamiting fish. Well, that's a new way.
Well, yeah. I was never a witness to that, but I'd heard of it, and I know they had that story once where they took, I think they took Grandpa's boat, and they weren't supposed to, of course, you know, teenagers, and you light a stick of dynamite, you drop it in the water, and when it goes kaboom, I think it's the concussion that kills the fish, and they float to the surface. You pick them up. I never saw this. I don't know if it works, but I've heard. But they lit the stick of dynamite, and just instead of throwing it, he dropped it in the water right off the gunwale of the boat. Well, so they tried to row really quickly. Of course, I think they just broke an oar or popped it out of the oar lock. So here they are stuck right close to this. And when it blew up, it's an old clinker built boat. It blew all of the stuffing, the caulking out of the boat, and it just sunk. Oops. How are you going to get away with that one, right?
I won't try that then. No. How have your researches changed you? I don't know if that would apply to your situation. If not, then maybe what could other people gather from this story of Hawaiians, you know, coming and this sort of conglomerate, this joining of cultures.
Mm-hmm. There are so many Hawaiians on this coast, or people of Hawaiian descent, not Hawaiian anymore. It's that melting pot syndrome that's happened. There are people that don't even realize they are of Hawaiian descent. In a lot of ways, in the olden days, like I have an uncle who lives in Duncan, and he doesn't deny his Hawaiian roots. But to him, he's more Indian than Hawaiian. He married a Cowichan native woman, and he knows that community. He knows the customs. So his Hawaiian side just sort of disappeared on him. And that's not uncommon. There are a lot of people I talk to, and they had no idea they're of Hawaiian descent until you speak to them a bit and you mention some names. They go, oh, I had an uncle by that name, or a grandfather. He said, well, they were Hawaiians. And I go, well, no one told me. So it's there with the fur trade people at one time in Fort Vancouver. The population of the fort was probably 50% Hawaiian. So they were the largest group of people, other than the Indian people, the indigenous people. So there was a lot of Hawaiians on this coast, and there's still a lot of the descent here. I have a man who came up from Ferndale, Washington. He was looking for his Indian roots. He was looking for the Wilson family. He found my cousin Pauline, and she's my cousin because she's married to my cousin. He spoke with her about the Wilsons, and that's all of the Indian roots. And then he pulled out an old postcard that was written to his great uncle or something from Mrs. P. Rowland. And he said, do you know who this is? And my cousin, her husband, looked at it and he said, oh, that's my grandmother. So then we start making, he just turned on that, and now here's this Hawaiian connection that he never knew was to his family. So this, it's interesting. It's just, you know, you never know. And if you can't get out there and scratch around and look, you know, to me it's just fascinating to see where these people came from, where they went, what they did. As I said, if I had 24 hours a day to do this, I'd be a happy person. But unfortunately, it falls by the wayside for months, sometimes years, before I'll drag it out and I take a look at the pictures and stuff. I go, man, I gotta find out who that is. It's difficult.